42 boys are mauled by bears in the biblical book of 2 Kings. How could God's prophet ever desire such a thing? Today on Timothy Talks. Do you want to understand the Bible, but you're confused? You've come to the right place. This is Tough Bible Questions on Timothy Talks, where I'm going to work through answers to your questions about the tough, challenging, and sometimes flat-out weird sections of the Bible. I'm so glad that you're joining me today on Timothy Talks. My name is Daniel Pentamone, and I'm the host of the show today. We've been looking at some really tough Bible questions, so if you haven't already, feel free to check out some of the previous episodes. We ask questions like, are dinosaurs in the Bible? Who were the Nephilim? Does God command genocide? And last week, was Samson a good guy? But today, though, I want us to look at one of the most puzzling Bible stories. This is the story of, at least it looks like, a prophet killing little boys. Wow. Well, what am I referring to? I'm referring to two verses hidden deep in the book of 2 Kings. Well, I say deep in the book. They're only in chapter 2. You don't have to read too far, but I mean, how many of us are brave enough to venture deep into the book of 2 Kings? I know. It's one of those tough books that's filled with a lot of history. It recounts the rise and fall of different kings, both of Israel and Judah, two different nations that come from God's people. And in 2 Kings chapter 2, verses 23 and 24, we come across the story of these boys who are apparently killed by a prophet. Let me read the story to you. It says, and this is talking about the prophet Elisha. It says, he went up from there to Bethel, and while he was going up on the way, some small boys came out of the city and jeered at him, saying, go up, you bald head! Go up, you bald head! And he turned around, and when he saw them, he cursed them in the name of the Lord. And two she-bears came out of the woods and tore 42 of the boys. Wow, what do we do with something like this? I mean, this is a violent story. It's edgy, it's brutal, and it sure doesn't feel like the God that we love and the God that we serve, a God of mercy, love, compassion, forgiveness. What is this, about a prophet cursing little boys and then they're getting mauled by these bears? This doesn't even feel like it deserves to belong in the Bible, you know what I mean? Well, as you can imagine, a story like this has given lots of fuel to the detractors. They say something like this: who would ever want to serve a God like that? And what a grump this prophet is. Can you imagine meeting a prophet like this who just turns around and curses little children? So as I was getting ready for this episode, I read a comment that said that this prophet was as short on humor as he was on hair. And certainly if you read the account, I mean, that's what it sounds like. They're laughing at him that he's bald and he doesn't seem to have any humor about his lack of hair. And it's like, come on, haven't we all teased someone from time to time? Is it really that big of a deal that we have to bring out the bears? Well, here's this prophet, so we imagine old and grumpy, and he's so self-conscious about his looks, or he's just flat-out vengeful, that he desires death on a few kids who are just teasing him about his lack of hair. What do we do with that? Well, it's a tough question, but I think that we can actually find some great biblical evidence as we look more closely at this story. So I'm going to be right back. Let me tell you how you can get your tough Bible questions answered. Listen to this. Now it's your turn. This season at Timothy Talks, the goal is to answer your tough Bible questions. So do you have a tough Bible question? If so, email it to timothytalkspodcast@gmail.com. That's timothytalkspodcast@gmail.com. Plus, every time you send a tough Bible question, you'll get a chance to win a Bible study resource of your choice so that you can understand the Bible even better. We might devote a whole podcast episode to answering your tough Bible question. All right, so we're talking about this situation where there's this prophet Elisha, and he curses these boys, and then they are torn by these bears that come out of the wilderness. How do we understand this? What is going on, and why is this story even included in the Bible? Well, I'm going to start by working through what we can actually learn from the text, and then I want to talk about where this story actually fits into the larger flow of the book of 2 Kings, and how this story fits into history with a purpose. I'll explain when we get to it. But let's walk through this text, each of the different aspects. So first of all, you have this reference to what the text calls small boys. It's an interesting term, and it's translated small boys, but it doesn't really have the same meaning that we would probably assign to it. So it refers to boys or lads or youths, and then it qualifies that these are small ones. Well, what exactly is a small boy in biblical times? Here's the interesting thing. The word that is used for boy in this passage is actually a word that's used many other times throughout the Old Testament. And the thing that's remarkable about it is that it's used for people who can be up to their late 30s. So this word is sometimes used for people in their 20s. It's sometimes even used for people in their 30s, even as late as 39 years old, and you can still be called a boy. This word in the Hebrew can still refer to you if you're 39 years old. So for example, in Genesis 41, verse 12, the word is used to refer to Joseph in the Hebrew, even though he was probably in his late 20s by this time. Now obviously it's qualified that these are small boys, so probably we're not looking at the long end of the spectrum, we're looking at the short end of this range of use. So we're probably not looking at the late 20s, late 30s, we're probably looking at a much younger age, or even 8 to 12-year-olds. We could very well be talking about teenagers. And I think that that's probably, based on how this word is used throughout the rest of the Old Testament, I think that's probably the picture that we should have in our mind. We're talking about 14, 15, 16-year-olds, most likely. These are the small boys that meet the prophet. Also, it's important to notice that there are probably quite a few of them. Now, you notice that 42 of the boys are torn by the bears. But it doesn't say that this is all of them. It says that some of them are torn. So you probably get the picture that there's a lot more than 42. If suddenly two bears come out of the forest and there's a crowd of kids, well, what's that crowd of kids going to do? They're going to disperse in every direction. So for the bears to catch 42 of them, either the kids all ran in the same direction, which is unlikely, and the bears can grab them really fast, or more likely, there's just a whole lot more of them. So most likely, we're talking about a crowd of well over 50, maybe even 100 or 200 or 300 of these kids, again, teenagers, that are here that are taunting the prophet Elisha. So again, already we're starting to see that the picture that the Bible presents is probably one of a large crowd, almost like a gang of teenagers who are here. And another thing that we can notice is that they meet Elisha while he is on the way. He's not in the city, but he's actually on the way. So this indicates that he's probably outside the walls of the city. He's probably in the countryside walking along a path. Again, this is another little clue that indicates these probably aren't like toddlers or 8-year-olds or 10-year-olds, because really, how many 8-year-olds or 10-year-olds are going to be wandering in the countryside alone away from their parents in a group of 100 or 200 or 300 of them? Probably very unlikely. But you could probably imagine teenagers doing this, a group of them out there in the countryside. So we're not talking about little kids. We're talking more about a full-on youth gang that has met the prophet Elisha. And then we come to the taunt. And they say, "Go up, you bald head. Go up, you bald head." So what exactly are they talking about? Go up? What are they telling Elisha to do? The idea here probably is they're saying, keep going. Keep going. It says that Elisha had gone up. And now they come to him and they say, go up. In other words, keep moving. These kids don't like Elisha. When Elisha shows up near their town, they come out in a gang and they say, get moving, prophet. We don't want a prophet of God in this place. Keep moving. Make yourself scarce around here. Now, there's another possibility as to what this could mean. We know that Elijah, the prophet, had just gone up to heaven very recently, right before this event. And so he had gone up to heaven in a chariot of fire, and Elisha was there when Elijah was taken up to heaven. So it's possible that these kids are actually referring to that event, and they're mocking him and teasing him like, come on, you do it now. You saw Elijah do it, now you do it. Go on up to heaven if you're really a prophet like he is. But I don't think that that's probably what's going on. I think that the other option is a better option, which is to say that they're just saying, get out of here. We don't like you. Make yourself scarce. We don't want a prophet of God in our region. Now, the other thing is, of course, they mock him for being a bald head. The funny thing about this is that if you study ancient Israelite culture, The custom was that you didn't travel with your head uncovered. In other words, as you are walking from place to place, you would have a covering over your head. So most likely, Elisha has this covering over his head. They can't even see that he's a bald person. Now, this means one of two things. Either they know that he's a bald person and they're just mocking him for it, or they really don't even care whether he's bald or not. They're just using it as a term of derision. And this was a term of derision at that time. To call someone a bald head sort of means like you don't have anything in there. There's nothing back behind your forehead. So either way, whether they know it or whether they're just making this up, it's a derisive term, and they're telling this prophet of God, they're using derisive terminology toward him, and they're saying, make yourself scarce, get away from here, we don't want you around. Now, the location of where this is happening is very interesting. This is happening, the text specifically tells us that this is near Bethel. Why is Bethel important? Well, if you go back hundreds of years earlier in Israel's history, you would come to the time when the kingdom of Israel, is split into two parts. In the south, you have a kingdom called the kingdom of Judah. And in the north, you have a kingdom called the kingdom of Israel. Now, the family of David rules in the south. But in the north, you have other kings who are not descendants of David who are ruling in the north. The very first one of these kings, his name is Jeroboam. And he starts up this kingdom. It's a Hebrew kingdom. It contains 10 of the 12 tribes of Israel. It's north of David's kingdom that's ruled by David's family. It's known as the kingdom of Israel. And because Jeroboam doesn't want the people to go to Jerusalem in the other kingdom, he has an interesting idea. What he does is he creates two golden calves, and he puts them in two cities, one in the north and one in the south. In the north, he puts this golden calf in the city of Dan. In the south, he puts it in the city of Bethel. So what you have is these two cities become cult centers for the religion of Israel. And it's not the religion, it's not the pure religion of the Bible, of the Old Testament, the religion that's given to Moses. No, this is a religion that is a cultic religion that doesn't worship Yahweh in the way that Yahweh is to be worshipped. So this is almost a center of anti-Yahweh worship. So it's very significant that this happens near Bethel. This crowd comes out from one of the centers of anti-Yahweh worship, and they are mocking Elisha. This is a center of idolatry, in other words. And they're coming out en masse. Like we said, probably hundreds of these kids coming out. They're coming out en masse from a center of idolatry, telling a prophet of Yahweh, make yourself scarce from here. You see what's, do you sort of see here? There is a purpose, and there is a mission, and there is a plan going on. They do not want God. They are actively hostile to God. These aren't just random teens hanging out harassing a poor guy. They are here for a purpose, to get him gone. They don't want a prophet anywhere around them. Now notice Elisha's response. A couple things we have to notice here is, first of all, you might get this idea that Elisha is this old, cranky guy. And Elisha's not old at this point. Elisha is just beginning his ministry as a prophet of God. Most likely, because he has decades of ministry ahead of him, most likely Elisha is probably still in his 20s. Lots of service left in him. He is not just this cranky old guy that doesn't like kids. Now Elisha gets to Bethel, and as he's in the way, he pronounces this curse on these youths. He had actually just been in Jericho, a city that's very close by. And if I had read the verses right before this account, you would have seen how Elisha was a blessing to the people of Jericho by miraculously healing their water supply. But notice that it just says that Elisha cursed them in the name of the Lord. It doesn't say, and this is very important to notice, it doesn't say that Elisha cursed them to be torn by bears. It doesn't say that Elisha cursed them because he wanted them to die, or even that they would die. It simply says that he cursed them. In other words, that's all that Elisha did. Now, is that a drastic action? Absolutely. But that's very different than Elisha saying to them that he wants them all to die from a bear, or even somehow summoning a bear. As far as we know, based on this account, Elisha doesn't know what's going to happen. He sees a gang of young people coming out of a center of idol worship, mocking him because they hate the prophets of God. And he puts a curse on them. Now that's a pretty severe thing to do. But that's very different than him desiring bears to come out and tear them. Now, obviously, what does happen, though, is that the bears do come out. These young people, some of them are mauled by these bears. And again, I'm going to point out, it doesn't say all of them, but some of them. It doesn't even say that 42 of them die. It's possible that all 42 of them die. It's maybe even probable, depending on how badly they were torn. But it doesn't say that they all die. But what is very clear is that this is some harsh, harsh stuff that's going on. So that's sort of the story. That's sort of what's going on in the account itself. And as you can see already, it's a very different account than what you might pick up just by a quick skimming of this passage. Now I want to talk about, though, how this passage actually fits into the flow of the book of 2 Kings. If you were here last week, I was talking about history with a purpose. I was talking about how Samson's story actually fits into the book of Judges because Judges is history with a purpose. Well, 2 Kings is the same way. It's history with purpose. Actually, 1 and 2 Kings, it seems that originally they were once one single book, and they were divided to make it easier and more accessible, but it was once one book that recounted the history of Israel from the time of the division between north and south, all the way to the destruction of the northern kingdom and the captivity of the southern kingdom of Judah. So this is sort of everything that the book covers. Now that is a lot of history. That is hundreds and hundreds of years of history. In other words, the book of Kings might be a tough book to get into. It might have a lot of kings and a lot of events and a lot of battles. But in the scheme of things, if you look at how many chapters there are, it's still a very short two books. Very short two books. And it's covering hundreds and hundreds of years. If I gave you a history of the United States from 1776 to today, you wouldn't be surprised if it was 200, 300, 400 pages long, because there's a lot of history that happened in the last couple hundred years of America's history. Well, the Book of the Kings covers a whole lot more time in a whole lot less space. So the Book of Kings is written, it's not recording all the details, it's recording the most important. And again, it's history with a purpose. What's the purpose of 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Kings? It seems that the purpose there is to show what happens to a people when they reject God, and when they pursue disobedience, and they don't obey the God who has commanded them to live a certain way and to be his covenant people. And so you see this decline, just like you saw in Judges, a decline. So also in 1 and 2 Kings, you see a decline that happens to a people that's disobedient to God. So in other words, what I'm saying is, this event that's only two verses long, a weird story about a prophet and bears mauling young people, it is here for a purpose. Now, like I mentioned, just before we read about this, we read about a miracle where Elisha heals a spring of water in the city of Jericho. There was a curse that was resting on Jericho, and if you go through the Old Testament, you can trace this curse that's placed on the city of Jericho. And Elisha comes, and evidently part of this curse involved this water. But Elisha comes, and by pouring a bowl of salt into some bitter water, he actually seems to remove some of this curse, or maybe the whole curse. It's not clear. So it's really remarkable that you have these two events put right next to each other, a curse removed and a curse applied. I think that there's a specific reason for this. The point is that God delights to show mercy. Elisha blesses people in the city of Jericho. But immediately after this, we also see that God takes sin seriously. Elisha pronounces a curse. He has the authority of God. And while he may use that authority to remove the curse, he also has authority to apply a curse. Another thing that's interesting is that this is happening at the very beginning of Elisha's ministry. It's as if God is testifying. And some of the first things that Elisha is going to do on the scene as a prophet of God is he's going to remove a curse and he's going to apply a curse to show he is here on God's behalf. What Elisha says is significant. What Elisha says is being spoken by the spokesperson of Yahweh, the one who can remove the curse of God, and the one who can apply the curse of God. And it is serious. And what Elisha is saying, for the rest of his ministry, you need to pay attention to Elisha. Because here is a man who is commissioned by God, and here is a man who, by miracles, is showing that he has the authority of God. Woe to the person who messes with this authority. So this is history with a purpose. Elisha is introduced as one of the most famous prophets in Israel's history, and he comes in the power of God, the power to bless and the power to curse. Now at this point, we have to come to another question. Is this okay? Is it even okay that young people are mauled by bears? And at this point, it really just depends on what you think about God. Like we already saw, there are a lot of myths about this passage. And at first, it seems like it's just about little boys being killed by a prophet, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a malicious gang of young men who are out specifically to insult one of Yahweh's messengers and to tell him to go home and get away from their center of idolatry. They don't want him around. They are devoted to the worship of this golden calf. In other words, this is a case of deriding God's prophet because you hate God and you don't want God anywhere around you. And God doesn't take this lightly. It's evil to ridicule him, and it's evil to ridicule his prophets in this way. And here's honestly where the story gets scary. Young people don't get a pass. That's right. Young people don't get a pass. They may be young people. They may just be teenagers, but they're not going to get a pass because they're young. A guy named Matthew Henry said this: "These children said as they were taught. They had learned of their idolatrous parents to call foul names and give bad language, especially to prophets." So ultimately, in a sense, this is the parents' fault, but it's also the young people's fault. Both of them are responsible. And there's an interesting passage in the book of Leviticus, chapter 26, verses 21 and 22, that illuminates this event, and I think it will help us to understand better what's going on. It says, "Then if you walk contrary to me and will not listen to me, I will continue striking you sevenfold for your sins, and I will let loose the wild beasts against you, which shall bereave you of your children and destroy your livestock and make you few in number, so that your roads shall be deserted." This is a promise that God is giving to his people, saying, if you're going to be disobedient to me, there's going to be some consequences. And one of them is, I will let loose the wild beasts against you, which shall bereave you of your children. Now, there's a whole lot of consequences that God could give to his people, but here he's doing a small amount of this consequence in this story. There's also another perspective that you can look at this story from, and that is to see that God is, in a sense, using these bears to bring judgment, but a limited judgment, only a limited judgment on his people when he could go so much more. See, these evil children, you think about how evil this is to go out and mock a prophet of God like this. But there was a greater evil that was going to come on the people of Israel if they continued in their disobedience. How do we know? Well, because they did continue in their disobedience. That greater punishment was the nation of Assyria. So sometime later, the nation of Assyria comes along and destroys the northern kingdom and takes them all captive after ruining the nation. Now, the Assyrians were one of the most feared and most violent people groups in the entire ancient world. And God knew that these Assyrians would come against his people if they continued to be disobedient. So you can understand that in a sense, this is a blessing to the people if they will learn from it. And they will turn away from their wickedness, of their hatred of God's people, if they would learn the lesson of the bears and turn away from idolatry and serve God, maybe Assyria won't come. But unfortunately, they don't listen, and Assyria does come, and there's great suffering applied to tens, even hundreds of thousands of people, because the nation will continue stubbornly in their idolatry. 2 Chronicles chapter 36, verses 15 through 16 explains this. Now, this is not specifically speaking about the northern kingdom of Israel. It's actually speaking about the southern kingdom of Judah, but the words apply just as well because they are all still Hebrews, God's people. It says, "The Lord, the God of their fathers, sent persistently to them by his messengers because he had compassion on his people and on his dwelling place. But they kept mocking the messengers of God, despising his words and scoffing at his prophets, until the wrath of the Lord rose against his people, until there was no remedy." So this is sort of an account at the end of the history, saying this is what happened. The Lord sent his messengers to them. He had compassion on them. But they despise his word. They scoff at his prophets, and they continue to do this so long that eventually the wrath of the Lord rose against his people until there was no remedy. It's a tough thing, there's no doubt about it. This is a tough story, and it really makes you ask the question. You have to wrestle with this yourself. Does God have the authority to punish evil people, even evil young people in a way like this. But that's what the Bible says. And as you can see, there's more to the story than perhaps the picture that you get if you just quickly read through these verses. Well, thank you so much for joining Timothy Talks as I'm answering these tough Bible questions. Again, please feel free to join me again next week. I'm planning to talk about the strange case of the king's arrows. And this is a really fascinating story. It's also from the book of 2 Kings, where a king is commanded to do these bizarre things with these arrows. And then because he doesn't seem to understand what he's supposed to do, he gets punished for it. It's really weird. But if you've not already, let me invite you to subscribe. You'll never miss an episode. You'll even make sure to get that episode that's coming out next week. And if you enjoyed today's show, really, I have said this before, but again, please feel free to invite your friends, your family members, maybe people you know from church who might value this content, maybe even an unsaved person that you know who doesn't have that relationship with Jesus Christ, but is really just wrestling through what the Bible says, and they can learn a little bit more. Well, thanks so much for listening, and God bless.